The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Welcome to the Woodshed Music Program. I'm your host, Gary Puckett, coming to you exclusively on the new media program feeds of www.theflypod.com. As you may know, we feature a different bluegrass or country music artist or group each and every show. Listen to this song, and we'll be right back with our guests for today. This is I Won't Do It Again.
Well, I let myself love you, and I let myself need you, and I soon had to see again and again. Now my heart is breaking, and I'm the one who's to blame. When I hear you calling, I won't do it again. I won't do it again. I won't do it again. When I hear you calling, about the pain and the glory, and if that's a whole story, I won't do it again. I won't do it again. I won't do it again. If that's a whole story, I won't do it again. I won't do it again.
Our guest on today's show is Kathy Kallick, a very talented bluegrass singer, songwriter, and guitar player out of Northern California. Kathy, welcome to the Woodshed Music Program on theflypod.com.
Well, thank you, Gary. I'm glad to be here.
I appreciate you working this interview into your busy schedule. I know you're very busy.
My pleasure.
Kathy, how old were you when you first realized that singing was to be your life?
Well, I first started singing in the folk scene in Chicago when I was about 18, and I was writing my own songs then. And then I moved out to California a couple years later, and there was this thriving bluegrass, very traditional bluegrass scene going in San Francisco, that I just got swept away by that. And still, it was always something I was doing while I was figuring out what I was going to do with the rest of my life. But here it is 30 years later, and it's still what I do.
Oh, that's great. That is wonderful. Well, how long have you been then performing professionally?
Well, I started with my group, the Good Old Persons, in 1975, and it's been ever since then.
Have you seen it change over the years?
Well, there have been many phases and changes in the bluegrass scene. When I started out, you know, the definite power and focus of the bluegrass world was in the first generation. We got to see Bill Monroe and his band and Ralph Stanley come to the Bay Area in California at least once a year. Those were our heroes, the people we aspired to. And we, as young people in our early 20s were specks on the map of bluegrass. And particularly as women, there was a very small role for us at the time. We weren't taken very seriously. Certainly over the last 30 years, women have become more prominent in bluegrass. Bluegrass has become a global music that's listened to everywhere in the world and has pockets of popularity in the most unlikely spots. And I would say that the power of bluegrass now is held by 20-somethings, by the young people. It's very interesting to me to watch, and somewhat ironic, since I never seem to be in the group that's in charge of everything. But, you know, that's life.
Well, you know, you talk about bluegrass being global. I was going to ask you this question. Is bluegrass music different on the West Coast compared to other areas of the country? Is there a little bit of local flavor that's kind of injected into it, or is it still fairly a traditional sound?
Well, I would say that certainly in the first years that I was playing, the music that was played in Northern California was very traditionally based, and bluegrass bands were playing the traditional bluegrass songs written by Stanley Brothers, Bill Monroe, Jimmy Martin, Flat and Scruggs, and trying their best to emulate that sound. That being said, there was a history in the Bay Area of women being in the forefront of music, I think because of the folk and rock and roll scene here, where there were a lot of women, you know, quite up front in those bands. By those people, I'm meaning Grace Slick or Janis Joplin or Joan Baez, people like that. So bluegrass scene in the Bay Area had women in it from the start in lead roles, lead singing, lead instrumentalists from the late 60s on. So that did give California bluegrass a different sound because I don't think there were women as prevalent elsewhere in the country.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, you are a very talented songwriter.
Thank you.
I just love some of the lyrics, but I do have to ask you, can you describe the process you go through when writing and composing a new song? I mean, do you tend to write the lyrics and then go after the melody or vice versa?
Well, I get asked that question a lot as a songwriter and when I teach songwriting, and it can happen in every way. Sometimes a line of lyric and melody come simultaneously, and that's the key to the song, and the rest of the song just flows from that first bit. Sometimes I'll write all the lyrics, and then the cadence of the lyrics will start to suggest a melody to me. And very occasionally I get a melody stuck in my head, and I think, you know, if I were a fiddle player, this would be a fiddle tune. But since my fiddle playing is only good for crowd dispersal, I have to write lyrics to it. And it happens all those ways.
Well, how would you compare singing live performances to singing in the studio for recording sessions? It has to be different.
Well, one of the challenges is getting the vitality of a live performance into a record. I think that is a challenge for every professional musician who records. When you're doing a live performance, you have all kinds of ways to move the audience, and the interaction between the performers and the audience is a big part of it. So much personality can come through by things other than just the sound you're making.
Mm-hmm.
And when
mm-hmm.
you go into the studio, there's a tendency for the music to get very cold and sterile and precise. In earlier recording projects that I was involved in, there would just be an obsession with trying to have everything be perfectly in tune and perfectly in time. And over the years, I've come to really embrace any little scratchiness in the vocal or any hint of humor or, you know, any time that things fall out a little bit of being perfect.
It's kind of an individuality, isn't it? I mean,
pardon?
It's a little nuance that only you put there.
I mean, well, that's the goal, to try and let your personality come through in just the sound.
Yeah. Tell me something about each of the artists in your band who are on your CD, Walking in My Shoes.
All right. The mandolin player is a man named Tom Beckany. He and I started out in the Bay Area right around the same time in the early 70s. He'd been in a number of pivotal groups in the Bay Area that, you know, started out around the same time I did. With the Good Old Persons, he had a group called Done Gone, which also was based on original compositions by their guitar player and singer, Don Humphreys. So he's very comfortable being involved in the process of inventing music, not just learning something off of a record, but figuring out how a brand new song is going to go. His mandolin playing is incredibly versatile inside of bluegrass. You'll hear little references to all the great mandolin players in bluegrass. He's not specifically a Monroe style, but he certainly can play that. You know, he's got a lot of different techniques and voices in his mandolin playing. Abram Siegel, the banjo player, is a very blues-infused, melodic, lyrical kind of a banjo player, while completely reverential of Earl Scruggs. He also writes a lot of his own tunes. He's very inventive. You just never will hear him playing a banjo solo that you've heard somebody else play before. He always puts his own mark on it. Both these men are fabulous harmony singers and like to argue over who's going to get a baritone part. Amy Stenberg, the bass player, is my sister in singing in this group. She and I love to sing together, and I think our voices have a good blend. Our voices don't sound at all alike, so I enjoy that. I enjoy the fact that she has a different kind of voice than I do. Her voice is a little lighter and a little bit higher, so she can really be a good foil to me.
Mm-hmm.
She is a big fan of traditional country music, especially the Bakersfield sound, and she's an incredibly funny person, so she brings all those elements into the group as well.
Wonderful. You know, the music business is quite competitive, as you well know.
Uh-oh, there's my dog.
Oh, singing vocals.
That's Lester.
Oh, that's okay. Lester flat? No, probably not.
He's not flat. He's fluffy.
Yeah, that's okay, too. The music business is quite competitive. What approach to marketing your music and your shows have you found to be the most effective? I mean, it's different today than it was just even 10 years ago.
Oh, it definitely is. It's much more of a festival scene.
Isn't it
than
more
ever.
Exciting today, though?
Pardon?
In a way, isn't it more exciting today? More original material, more...
There is more original material, although I think there's a lot of original material that doesn't really need to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody in bluegrass feels compelled to write their own songs. And sometimes I would just rather hear people sing a Carter Family song. Sometimes I would rather sing a Carter Family song.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's nice to, you know, to have a mix.
Well, what do you think of the MP3 downloadables and that whole approach to distribution of music today that really wasn't here even 5 years ago to any great extent?
Well, here's the answer to that. I'm just not that modern of a girl. So I'd have to go to my daughter and ask her. My 11-year-old daughter would tell me everything about that. I still really like to get a CD. I like to look at the packaging. I like to look at the booklet. I like to sit down and focus on music when I'm going to listen to it. I just don't go around with something stuck in my ear listening to whatever's channeling in there 24 hours a day.
Oh, that's fair. That's fair. As a bluegrass artist, who has been that one player or that one singer that you admire most?
Well, Bill Monroe.
Bill Monroe.
He was a huge influence on me. I saw him so many times in the first 10 years that I was playing bluegrass, and he was very welcoming and warm and supportive of the musicians in the Bay Area in California. And he singled me out when he heard a song I'd written called A Broken Tie, and said, well, now that's a fine bluegrass song, and I want to hear you sing that every time.
Oh.
And he invited my group back to Bean Blossom 2 years.
Wonderful, and, wonderful.
He would actually stand out in the audience and watch to make sure I sang that song. So he definitely encouraged me to write songs. He definitely gave his stamp of approval, and his songs are still some of my favorite songs to sing in the world.
That's great. It's wonderful to have somebody like that in your path from the past that you can reflect on, feel good about, that they influenced you. That's a great story.
Yeah, I feel lucky.
Yeah, precisely. It's very fortunate. Well, what advice would you give today to an aspiring singer or songwriter?
Well, I would say the most important thing is to find your own voice and keep it sincere and straight from the heart. While you're doing that, observe the standards that were set by the traditional bluegrass musicians in their songs and their playing. Bluegrass music is definitely a performance style of music. I think Bill Monroe designed it to be performed for people, and he wanted to see people get riled up. He wanted to see people sing along and maybe jump up and dance and get excited when that banjo player would step up and play. So while you're being reverential to that tradition, you have to always sound like yourself, too.
Be true to yourself.
Be true to yourself.
That's good advice in a lot of circles.
It's true.
Yeah, just in life. So what's new and fresh with the Kathy Kallick Band? What are you working on? Any new projects?
Well, we have a new record that I'm looking forward to getting this next record because we had it come out within the last year. And that record is called A Warmer Kind of Blue.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have to be sending it to you just immediately. Another bunch of originals from myself and also from the instrumentalists in the group. Great traditional songs as well. We had a lot of fun recording it, and we have had a new addition join our group for that record and for a lot of our performances, a man named Brian Wicklin, who plays fiddle, and he's from Minnesota. So that's a fur piece from us in California. We get him to play with us when we can, and he has really participated in, you know, advancing the melodies of the songs and just putting his great fiddle playing in.
Well, if you send it to us, we'll get it out there for you.
All right, and then we can talk again.
Yeah, it sounds like a deal for me. Kathy, I have enjoyed having you on the Woodshed Music Program.
Thank you very much, Gary. It's been fun for me, too.
And I encourage our listeners to visit your website, www.kathykallick.com. That's www.kathykallick.com. I'd like to close out our program now with one of her songs. I'll let you select it, Kathy. What are we going to hear today from the Kathy Kallick Band?
Well, why don't you play the title song from this album, sort of a woman's perspective on a classic bluegrass sound, that number called Walking in My Shoes.
Sounds fair to me. So here we go, listeners. This is Walking in My Shoes by the Kathy Kallick Band. Until next time, this is your host, Gary Puckett, for the Woodshed Music Program, coming to you direct to your iPod on our new media program feeds on www.theflypod.com. So long for now.
Who's walking in my shoes? I'm the one who's walking in my shoes. Well, I'm never scared enough to leave you, but I'm scared of looking like a fool. Sometimes I'm brave enough to speak. Talk can be so cheap, and love can make you weep. And there's a fool walking in these shoes, and I'm the one who's walking in my shoes.